Okay, yesterday we had we're on Sota Daf Lamed Gimel Amid Beis 33b, a little bit more than halfway down the page. We had a discussion between Reb Elazar and Reb Yehud, I believe, and there was a machlokas exactly where the Har Grizim and Har Evel was in the interior of the traditional Har Grizim or Evel, or did they create their own Har Grizim or Evel nearby? Anyway, the Torah now comes along. Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, he's going to say something that's relevant according to any opinion. And he's going to say, why is the Torah, and here is the real question. The Torah says, when you cross the Jordan River, the day you cross the Jordan River, and then it gives you very specific coordinates of where to go, how to go, and etc., etc. And the question is, why does the Torah go into such great detail? Why don't you just say, you'll go to Har Grizim and Har Evel? What do you need all this detail by the plains and by this and by that? So Reb Elazar ben Yaakov is going to tell us the reason for that. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, he says, Lo bo hakosef, why is the text coming to give us such intricate detail? Ela laharas lahem derech bishnia, to show them the way on their second stage of their journey to Canaan. The Torah is trying to help the Jews know which way to go. What does that mean? Kederech, just like the way Sheher Lam Barishona, the beginning stage when they were on the journey. In other words, when the Jews left Egypt, how did they know where they were going? When they left Egypt to go eventually towards Israel, how did they know which way to go? The pillar of cloud. The pillar of cloud went. So that was pretty easy. That's the best GPS. It just goes, you just follow where it goes. But guess what happened when Moshe died? Right? When Moshe died, all the three gifts ended at the same time. The man, the rock, and the cloud. So he died when the Jews were on the east bank. They mourned for him for 30 days. And then it was time to move on. So how are they going to know where to go? That's why the Torah now gives you the instructions exactly which way to go in the Torah, so they'll know how to go. Now you need, it's like a written out instruction sheet. That's a whole discussion. It's another Gemara. The simple answer is the manna lasted for quite a while. Lasted for over a month. That last manna lasted for a while till they crossed into Israel, and then they were able to eat from the wild stuff that was growing, the wheat and stuff like that. They were able to eat that.
And wasn't there lots of food left for them? People had died off?
Well, whatever. They took after they won some battles, it became easier. But there was food around. There's, you know, wheat and whatever all around. It's a very productive land, Israel. So anyway, here's the point. They're showing them the way to go. And now it's going to go into details. Now, if you look, interesting. According to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, the second half of the verse, which says, in the land of the Canaanite that dwells in the plain opposite Gilgal near Elomarah, has nothing to do with Mount Grizim or Mount Evel. It refers instead to the general route that the Jews should take after they crossed the Jordan when they conquered the land of Canaan. God knew that the pillar of cloud would cease to guide the Jews upon the death of Moshe, and that it would not direct them, when they would enter Canaan under the leadership of Yeshua. Accordingly, before Moshe died, God told the people which way to go. They should take the straight and trodden road that goes through the land of the Canaanite that dwells in the plain. That is, instead of traveling northward along the bank of the Jordan towards the mountainous Chivite territory, they would march westward through the plains of the Canaanite. Okay. So it was the general instructions. And now we're going to go into a little detail to hearing these instructions, such as, it says derech. One of the words was derech, the way. Derech means a road. So what does that teach us? Now, although we did learn the word derech means in direction, it also means the word road. And therefore, Hashem is hinting to them, b'derech lechu, take the roads, v'lo b'sadas akromas, and don't go through fields and vineyards. Take the roads that are already established. Another word over there said hayoshev, that we're living. So what does it mean? That dwells. It means you should travel biyishuv lechu. You should go through inhabited areas, v'lo b'midbaris, and not through wilderness. Barava in the plains. What does the plains mean? Barava lechu. Travel in the plain region, v'lo b'midbaris, and not in the mountains and hills. Okay, so that's just a little bit more detail. So it's telling exactly which types of roads to travel as you're going to that destination of Har Gerizim and Har Eifel. Good. Next point. Now we're getting into the complete details of how the Jews crossed the Jordan River. That's the first thing they had to do. They had to cross the Jordan River before they go to Har Gerizim and Har Eifel. Tana Rabbanan. We learned in Abraisa. Now, about what when they crossed that Jordan River. Okay, interesting. Now, this is almost an entire Tosefta. It's almost the entire eighth chapter of the Tosefta is going to be quoted now in this Gemara now. Yes, sir.
We just learned a minute ago that God gave all these directions, go on the roads, and go
right.
Wouldn't that mean that we have to travel to the farther mountains, not create two mountains close by? Otherwise, why have all these directions? Don't go through the wilderness and make the road and go to inhabited areas. It seems to me that you do have to travel somewhere.
I hear it. Well, they still travel a little bit, even if it was close.
Yeah,
Let's say if you have to travel 50 kilometers or 5 kilometers. Still, 5 kilometers, travel the roads, travel the inhabited parts.
You'd be less significant, but okay.
You know, I mean, I hear your question.
It's lending support for the opinion.
Yes. All right, Tana Rabbanan. Tosefta asks, Ketzad Avor Yisrael Sayarin, how did the Jews precisely cross the Jordan River? Well, normally what happened was, Bechol Yom, on a regular day, Aron Nosea Achar Shnei Degolim, the two primary flags went first, and then the Aron went. If you recall, the Jewish people, as they traveled in the desert, the Ark was in the middle, then you had three tribes in the north, three to the south, three to the west, three to the east. What happened is two tribes, the front flank, as it were, would go forward. Then the Aaron would go, and then the two back flanks would go. And that's what he's saying. Again, here, the 12 tribes divided into four groups of three, etc. The group led by Yehuda traveling first, and the two that were with him, followed by the group led by Reuven, the two with him, which in turn was followed by the Levites carrying the ark. Okay, so that's normally. But today, no. So in other words, the ark did not travel first. Now you're coming to the Sea of to the Yarden. Okay, you can't have the people traveling first because you need a miracle to happen. So the miracle is going to happen through the Kohanim who are carrying the ark. So the Hayom, and today, Nasa Trila, the ark traveled first. How do we know this? Shenemar, it says in Yehoshua, it says, Vehine, behold, Aaron Bris Adon Kol Haaretz, the Ark of the Covenant of the Mass of the whole world, Over Lifneichem, will pass before you, means all of you. Okay? So look at this. Marsha explains that when the Jews were in the impure lands outside Eretz Yisrael, the Shekhinah, which rests on the Ark, dwelt only in their midst. When they entered Eretz Yisrael, the Shekhinah preceded them to show that God is the master of the entire land. Okay, so the Ark's going to go first. Now, Bechol Yom Vayom, every day, normally when they traveled in Israel, Levim Nosin Es Aron, the Levites would carry the Ark. They would carry that. However, Vahayom, and on this day, when they crossed the Jordan, Nosu Kohanim, the Kohanim carried it. How do we know that? Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, in Yehoshua again, V'haya kenoach kapos ragle ha-kohanim, when the soles of the feet of the Kohanim, Nosei Aron, who carry the ark, will rest in the waters, etc., etc. Since this was a big miracle happening, it was befitting that the Kohanim should carry the ark. So that's two things that were different. The ark went first, and the Kohanim carried it. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, although it's really not correct to say it's a brisa, because it's really just a continuation of the Tosefta. So some may say there's a problem with that words. Anyway, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Peshlosha Makomos Nasu Kohanim Esarim. There's three times in Jewish history where the Kohanim carried the Ark. First one is, as we're going to talk about, Kesha Over Sayardim, when they crossed the Jordan River, number one. Ukesha Hesibus Yericho, when they encircled Yericho, before Yericho went down, the Kohanim carried the Ark. And also, Ukeshech Zirulim Komo, and when they put the Ark back in its place, meaning the Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo built, the Kohanim had to carry it into the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So that's when... okay, so he says, once King Solomon completed the temple, the Ark was carried by the Kohanim into its place. Okay, fine. So those are the three. Moving on to the next page. Let's go back now to what happened when they crossed the Jordan River. V'kivan shenit balu ragli kohanim. Once the Kohanim's feet, they're holding the Ark, they're at the edge of the Jordan River, the east edge of the Jordan River. As soon as their feet came touched into the water, chazra mayim lachrim, the waters went back, reversed its course. Remember, it didn't split like the splitting of the sea. Splitting of the sea was like that. Here we said the Jordan River, let's say it's flowing from north to south. So the Jordan River, which was flowing, normally just flows, right? So what happened is it came here and then went up. Went up. And therefore, whatever water was flowing, as the, you know, that one just went, but nothing replaced it. And then it just went up very high. Okay, that was the splitting. Now, how do we know all this? Shenemar, it says in the text, Ukevo no se haron adayardim, when those who were carrying the ark reached the Jordan, etc., etc. Look at the etc. And the feet of the Kohanim, the bearers of the ark, were immersed in the edge of the water. Then it goes on, Vayamdu amayim, the water stood up, hayordim, that were going down, and now it went milmala, from above, kamu, that stood, Nedachad as one column. So as soon as the Kohanim put their foot in the water, it was water, put their foot in the edge of the water, boom, the water went up. Now water does not stop flowing, right? The water is coming from the mountains, you know, way north. The water is flowing. And it was April time. And April time, that's the spring thaw. If you want to go on a boat ride in the Jordan, the best time is in March, April, because if it was a rainy winter. So if it was a rainy winter, you got the thaw of snow from the mountains coming down and the water flowing down, and you got, that's the most flow that you have. So the water's flowing and rushing, and now it's going up, so it's going to go up and up and up, and it's not flowing into any area. So now the Gemara asks, Vekama govan shomayim, what was the height of that column of water as it's going up and up and up and up and up? Look how far it went. Shneim asor mil, al shneim asor mil, keneged mach Yisrael. It went up 12 mil. A mil is a kilometer. It went up, the water went up 12 kilometers. So about, 7.5 miles. Right? I don't know how many miles is it till you hit whatever, different areas of the space, whatever. I have no idea.
Well, higher than flight.
Yeah. A flight goes what? How high does a flight go? What's the...
35,000 feet.
35,000 feet, so it's 5,000 feet a mile.
Yeah, yeah. So
7 miles. 7 miles. Interesting.
How about as high as an
airplane? Okay.
I think once you get over 40,000, you start to...
atmosphere problems, right? Okay, anyway, so it's 12,000 mil high, I imagine, by 12,000 mil wide, I'm imagining. That is all, and that corresponds to the size of the Jewish camp. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Okay, let's see what the commentary. When the Israelites crossed the Jordan, the groups of tribes did not follow one another in a straight line. Rather, they assumed the formation which they camped. Again, that four square, the box. We know this little camp extended over an area of 12 mil by 12 mil. If you went the distance from north to south and west to east as the camp rested, it was 12 mil. So it's 49 square kilometers. No, 49 square miles. All right? That's how big the camp was. Hence, the length of the procession crossing the Jordan was also 12 mil. It emerges that the time between the entry of the first people into the Jordan and the departure of the last people is no less than the time it takes the procession to travel 12 mil. Based on this review, it reckons that the column of water also advanced 12 mil in that time, because he assumes that the water moved upward at the same speed as the people. Now, that's interesting. That's another miracle. Now, the whole thing is a miracle, but waters rush faster than I think people can walk. But I guess when you're now going up against gravity, right, and it slows down a little bit. So that's what it's saying. So it went up 12 mil by 12 mil. It's like this 12 mil square foundation of water. I'm not exactly sure how that works. 12 mil by, but because the banks aren't that wide. Could be when the water went up, it spread out. Listen, once you're dealing with miracles.
Yes, coming.
Right, because that's what would go higher than that.
Exactly.
So it ends up, I guess, being a wall on one side of 12 mil by 12 mil. 12 mil high and 12 mil wide. That's what it is. So he says, in fact, it took somewhat longer than this for the Israelites to cross the Jordan. First, the width of the Jordan itself must also be taken into account. Secondly, Joshua addressed the people as they were crossing the Jordan. And they presumably still, when he spoke to them, yeah, there's a whole speech went on when they're in the middle of the Jordan River. Peter, however, does not enter these factors into the calculation because they would add only a fraction of a mil. Okay, anyway, that's what it was. That's his opinion. Amar lo, Rabbi Elazar of Shimon. Rabbi Elazar of Shimon argues, and he says to him, Lid varecha, according to you, Adam kal, omayim kam, is man swifter or is water swifter? That's the question. Which one goes faster? Havi Yomer, I would say, Mayim Kalim. I would say water is swifter than man. So therefore, Imkein, if so, Bo'in Mayim V'shomso. So the water could come and wash the people away. What does this mean? The current of a river is certainly swifter than a man. It thus takes longer for people to travel 12 mil than for the water in a river to cover the same distance. Therefore, if the waters of Jordan returned to their normal course after flowing only 12 mil. See, he's making an assumption that it went up and then it came right down. So he's saying, well, it would reach 12 mil faster than the Jews cross with 12 mil. The people would still be in the course of crossing over that time. The column of water would then come crashing on the people in the riverbed and sweep them away. Hence, Rabbi argues it is impossible the water rose only 12 mil. That's his question. Now, the Gemara is not going to give you Rabbi Yehuda's answer, but the commentary does. So we already thought of some answers. First of all, I don't understand the whole question. Who asks questions on a miracle? Once it's a miracle, God can do what the heck he wants. He can have it go slow. Rabbi Yehuda would respond, the river is certainly faster than man. This miraculous upward movement of the waters of the Jordan was not. That's part of the miracle, that the water didn't flow up so fast. Note, however, that according to this approach, the column moved more slowly than the river itself. And so the column's thickness would have had to continuously increase to accommodate the water arriving from upstream. That's it. It was becoming wider. Whereas there's still water coming. You have water rushing. Okay, so it's rushing. Okay, so even if you want to say it slows going up, but still you got to accommodate the rushing water. So I guess, you know, by spreading out, you know, if it would have just gone straight up, let's say, I don't know how, the widest part of the Jordan still isn't that wide. I don't know, 100 feet, I don't know, maybe the widest part. Okay, but that's not very wide compared to 12 mil. So as it goes up, it's not just going up, but it's expanding out. That takes time. It's not that, the whole thing is the water is not just going narrowly up, it's going like that. So that's, I'm answering the answers. There anyway, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon doesn't like it, and therefore he says like this. He has an upshot. El Malame, therefore we say, Shayamayim Nigdoshim Va'olim, that the waters heaped up even higher. It went higher than 12 mil. Keeping, Al-Gabe keeping, waves upon waves. Okay, which means arches. In other words, it was the top of the water was arched. Yes, sir. More mishalosh meos mil, more than 300 mil. That means that's already higher than the clouds. 300 mil is now, you're talking about 300 kilometers, 20 miles.
It's already past the atmosphere.
I don't, yeah, it's
20
miles. 300 mil, 300 kilometers. I'm sorry, I meant 200 miles. I meant 200 miles. I was off 10, that's all. So a mile's a lot. I don't know what it is to get to outer space, but that seems a lot to me.
But the question is, like, why are they doing all this? It's a miracle. Do they ask how the physics around...
You know what? I'm sure there is all kinds of mystical interpretations going on here. Okay?
I mean, you can be accepted as a miracle, and you could actually learn your questions.
Well, but I don't know. You know, I'm telling you, this is classic Gemara that has to have a mystical interpretation. That we have no idea what's really going on over here. And how high was this? Not done. At Sheros on Kol Malchei Mizrach Umarav, until all the kings of the east and west saw them. Again, I don't understand that, because even if it only goes 7 miles high, that's still pretty high. It's like a plane. So a plane is high enough for everybody to see it.
No, but kings in the east and west would be more like a star, like out in the atmosphere, right? Something way up there, like the moon or a star.
All right, maybe.
But 300 miles is nothing compared to moon or a star.
Okay, anyway, how do we know this? Shenemar, how do we know that everybody knew about this? The Pasuk says, Vayhi kishma kol malchei Amori, when all the kings of the Amorites heard, Asher be'evra yarden yama, the Amorite kings who were on the western side of the Jordan River, when they heard, V'chol Malchei Knani, and all the Canaanite kings, Asher Yom, which were on the west, Esa Sherhovish, Hashem Esmayar, and Nevin Yisrael, that Hashem dried up the Jordan River before the Jews Ad Avram Adar Cross. So you see, kings of the east of the west, meaning as far west of the Jordan, the Canaanite kings, it's all in the Middle East area, but they're able to see it, so that's had to go very high. Okay, anyway, and then the Pasuk says, not done, when they heard about this, the Pasuk continues, he just brought a proof that it had to be that high so kings from the east and west could see it. But then the Pasuk continues, Vayomas Levavam, their hearts have melted. This is now, what's her name? Rachav, I believe, giving the information to the spies, telling them the king's hearts have melted. Vayomas Levavam, The hearts have melted. They have no spirit before the Jewish people. That means you have to have seen some kind of a miracle. Now, there's a difference between hearing a miracle or seeing a miracle, right? If you hear about a miracle, it says, okay. If you see the miracle, and that rent made them very scared. That's what Rachel was telling them. And so too did Rachel tell Yoshua, so it's two things. The Pasuk in Perek Hey says it was so high it made everybody's spirit melt. Rachav was in Perek Beis, rather, and she said the same thing to Yoshua's spies, which she said, Ki shomanu, for we heard, Es asher hovish Hashem es meyamsuf, we heard how the waters were dried up. Uksiv, and the Pasuk also says, V'nishma, and we heard, and our hearts melted, and the spirit did not remain. So Rachav said that, and she said this prior to the crossing of the Jordan. Her words show that even 40 years after God had split the sea. Here's the point. Yeah, let's get the chronology right. When Yeshua sent the spies out, had the sea split yet? No, they hadn't crossed the Jordan River yet. Yeah, the Jordan. Jordan, I meant the Jordan. Now, so in Perek Hey, when it says that actually the Jordan split, it said it melted the hearts of the kings of the west. Now, she said the king's hearts have melted already. That's before the Jordan split. So what's going on? It was from the Sea of Reeds. The Sea of Reeds was already 40 years ago. You'd think you'd forget a little bit. So that's the commentaries ask why the Brisa quotes Rachav's statement when it's not made in reference to the crossing of the Jordan. According to the Marsha, the statement is relevant because it too must be interpreted in line with Rabbi Loza's premise. The Canaanites would not have become afraid upon hearing about a miracle unless they witnessed it themselves. With respect to crossing the Jordan, Rabbi Loza explained they saw the column of water rising up to the sky. When the sea, Red Sea was split, they also observed the miracle. How did they observe the miracle if the water's just packed out? Because all the bodies of the water in the world, even water contained in a vessel, split at the same time. That's the point. So therefore, they were able to see as well. They didn't see the Yamsuf split, but they saw every other single water split. So that's one reason why we brought that up. An alternative explanation, the Torah says regarding both the Jordan and the Reed Sea that the Canaanites heard about the miracle and became overwhelmed with fear. Rabbi Zohar taught that they knew about the miracle of the Jordan through seeing the column of water, as we said. From this, it can be derived that when the splitting of the sea is wet, Red Sea, they knew about the miracle because the walls of water which they formed, which were also described as columns, similarly rose to the heavens. Nupshat. Even though he's maintaining the riff over there, that when the Sea of Reeds split like this, by backing up, that'd be a place for the water to go. It went up. Anyway, so we're bringing this as well, just to prove to you that when you're seeing is believing and causes fear. Okay, now, we continue now. So now we've discussed how high it is. So let's continue now. Odom Bayardin, when the Jews were still in the river. Okay, so now, the Kohanim put their feet there, the waters went up. It's supposed to be an incredible thing. And the Jews are going through. You figure they want to go through fast. You know, like, how long is this going to hold, you know? And then the Jews say, stop, I have to give a drusha. Right? So that, Amar Lam Yeshua. Yeshua spoke to them, and he said the following. Du'u, you should know, Amo Atem Ram Yisrael. You have to know, but understand, you're crossing the Jordan. In other words, at what condition God's doing this miracle for you? Why is God doing this miracle for you? Why? Almanas, on the condition, Shatorishu es Yosher es Mitev, that you will chase out the inhabitants before you. Hashem's only doing this miracle because you're going to kill out the Canaanites. Shenamar, as the Pasuk says, how do we know that's what it said? It says, Vorashtem es kol Yosher es Mitev, you will chase out all the inhabitants of the land. Now, it's all Yoshua. Ima temosim ke mutav. If you're going to chase them out, it's all going to be good. Ve'im lav, if you don't chase them out, then moin mayim ushayim, then the water's going to come and wash you away. What's the word for you? Osechem. Now look how Osechem is spelled. Not Osechem, which it's Osechem. You see that last Hebrew word there? Usually the word should have been Eschem. The proper word for you, plural, would be Eschem. It says Osechem. Very unusual way to say them. So what does it mean? But rather, we'll wash Osechem away. So what is that? My Osechem. What's Osechem? So it's a contraction. It's a contraction of two words. Osi, me, ve'eschem, and you. So you should, if you don't accept this condition, then me together with you are going to drown in the Jordan River. So Tosos explains that by crossing the Jordan, they accepted responsibility for the actions of everybody, even those who aren't aware. He says, if you don't accept this condition, you're going to be punished. That's what he told them. We'll do one more line here. Odom Bayardim, and still when they're in the Jordan River, Omer Yeshua, Yeshua said to them, Harimu lachem ish even achas al shichmo, every man should raise one stone upon his shoulder, lemis b'shivtei Yisrael, for the number of tribes. So what did Yeshua do? He asked 12 men. He called 12 men. Each man should take one stone corresponding to each one of the tribes of Israel. Pick up a stone. Okay? Uksiv. And then it says, why? It says afterwards, Laman tiazos osbekir b'chem. So this shall be a sign in your midst. Kishon b'neichem ocha. When your children ask you tomorrow in the future, leymar, what are these signs? Because they're going to make a monument with these stones. So he's saying, so you'll be able to tell them, these stones are here because we once crossed the Jordan River miraculously. So, Simon Labanim, Sha'avros Eirdim, it's a sign for the children that their fathers had crossed the Jordan in a miraculous fashion. Later on it says like this, the passage states that the Jews lifted two sets of 12 stones from the riverbed. One set was placed in the river at the edge of the water at the place where the Kohanim carried the ark had stood while the Jews crossed the river. In other words, just on the east, mamish on the east bank of that river, they put up one monument of 12 stones. Okay, the other set of stones was lifted from the place where the Kohanim stood and brought to Mount Ebal, where they were used to erect an altar. They were then plastered and the Torah was inscribed on them. That same day, they were dismantled and taken to Gilgal, where they were used to erect a mountain. The Brisa now refers to the stones that were placed in the river. They were to serve as an everlasting memorial for the Jews to commemorate the great miracle God wrought by splitting the Jordan River. So I don't know if we can ever find those stones, but that was the idea to make some commemoration of that. There's still more than what Yeshua tells them, but we're going to leave that for tomorrow, a long drush indeed inside.